Hello, welcome to Metal Hammer Podcast, episode 4. I'm Mo, and this week I'm here with Luke and Jonathan. Our reviews editor, Jonathan Seltzer, has joined the party. Al is away today, so we've got Jonathan filling in. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing very well. Glad to be here.
Good to hear.
Darkening your podcast.
That's my word for it. How are you doing, Morton? What's going on? What have you been up to this week?
What have I been doing? Oh, I've been having a very metal and techie week.
You've been all over the fucking place.
Last week, I went to see Conjurer, who we are all big fans of, at the Black Heart in London. They played the new album, Maya.
And how was that?
In full, and it was fucking brilliant. Like, so,
they are a special band, aren't they?
It was so crushingly heavy. They were so slick. Like, there was nothing out of place, and you could just tell how much it meant to them to be playing it. And it sold out, I think, as well, which is cool, before the album even came out. So yeah, that was really good to see.
Excellent.
And then the day after, I boarded a plane to the Netherlands to go to Complexity Fest, which is a two-day tech metal festival in Haarlem, which is just outside of Amsterdam.
Not that Haarlem.
No.
That would be amazing.
No, about a 20-minute drive from Amsterdam. And yeah, it's nerdy. You can't get escape that, really. But it's a lot of fun, man. Like they've got their own beer they brew there. It's like 6%. So that was a good evening. And there's some fucking wicked bands. I didn't realize how much I'd enjoy Carnifex. I've never really been into much deathcore, but they were just wicked. Yeah. Really, really sick.
I don't mind. Carnifex is definitely one of those bands I don't mind watching live.
Mm.
They know how to bring it.
Exactly. They were wicked. Chaotium were amazing. A band from Beirut. Like really, like intense metal. Really, really good. Sick for really good. As well, but my favourite, obviously, of the weekend was Employed to Serve, because they're always amazing live.
Absolutely.
Although it turns
out, it's interesting that they're on a bill like that.
Yeah,
one of those bands that have kind of crossed over into that world as well terms of their audience.
Yeah, because we sort of associate them with hardcore over here, but they listen to the guitars. It's pretty techie they do. Yeah, it's pretty.
They've got that tone that many bands. Like
yeah.
That. Sure.
But yeah, it was pretty awkward when they parted the crowd for a Wall of Death, and then the crowd just looked at each other. And the song ended.
Really?
Yeah, they didn't run into each other. No one knew. They did not know what to do.
Come on, man. Metal 101, that is.
They need direction signs.
Yeah, exactly. Now, when we sat down, we kind of said, oh, Jonathan, because he kindly filled in this week. We said, oh, have you actually been to any gigs this week? And you went to see a band called...
Maggot Heart.
Of course. Maggot Heart. Can you tell us about Maggot Heart?
Okay, so they're not the kind of gore grind band you'd probably expect.
That is literally what
it's, it's a punk band, and it's fronted by Linnea, who used to be one half of The Oath, and used to be the guitarist for Grave Pleasures.
Wow.
And she's gone off and...
Pedigree.
Yeah, she's gone off... We did a piece in them about a year back, and this is the first UK gig.
How was
and
it?
And it was absolutely incredible. It was just like... When someone's really in the zone, like, you can tell. And it just creates something that's bigger than the sum of its parts. And it was just so intense. It's furious. Just genuine heart and fury in there.
Awesome.
And, you know, very different from the kind of more... kind of occulty retro rock that she was doing before, but just totally personal, and she has a really tight band behind her, so it's not like the kind of sloppy punk. It's a band that really kind of gels into something that's even bigger than some of its parts. And yeah, I just thought it was one of those bands that are really inspiring, about someone who's just put themselves on the front line.
Amazing.
And I think the more people hear them, the bigger they're going to get, because there's something really special going on there.
Awesome. You heard it here first. Maggot Heart, not Gore Grinds, just awesome. Also, something massive that has happened this week is that we have a brand new issue of Metal Hammer out on the shelves. It is out there right now, people. If you have not bought it yet, get out there the second this podcast finishes and buy yourself a copy. We brought together Rob Halford and Tony Iommi. Judas Priest meets Black Sabbath for the first time ever, both on the cover of Metal Hammer, both in the same interview. We got the two guys together in a room in Worcester. It's capital of metal. in Worcester for a first time ever conversation about their amazing respective careers, the right from the very start of the late 60s, when they were both kind of bumming around in Birmingham as young guys, frustrated dudes kind of just trying to make a name for themselves in the rock scene back then, all the way into the excess and the huge burst of metal in the 80s. the difficulties that they encountered in the 90s right up into the 2000s when things started to come full circle, and both where they are now. They also talk about what they have planned. We know that Judas Priest have an absolute crusher of an album just about to drop on us. You can read that very special review by Dom Lawson in this issue as well. We also know that Black Sabbath called it quits last year. That doesn't necessarily mean by any stretch of the imagination that Tony Iommi is done writing music. He drops a few hints about what is to come. You need to go pick this up right now, only in our new issue. It's really good. I was actually there. I didn't do the interview. It was done by the excellent Dave Everly, who's a former deputy editor at Classic Rock, and stepped into this interview for us. But I was actually there when we did the shoot and some other bits and bobs with them. And sharing a room with these two guys was just one of the most surreal experiences I've ever had. Like, to see them both walk in, just instantly looking metal as fuck, taking the attention of everyone in the room straight onto them both, kind of seeing these godlike figures in front of you. But then what was actually really amazing is just how lovely their riff were. Like, they were both just... You kind of... I don't know what you expect, really. I've interviewed... Rob before, and have I interviewed Tony? I don't think I've interviewed Tony. I might have shook his hand once and managed a lot of shit myself. You've interviewed Tony before?
Yeah, I interviewed him last year. Yeah, he's genuinely just such a nice man. Like, happy to put up with any of my bullshit. But
absolutely. And yeah, like, honestly, seeing these two guys in the room together, like, it's just like a couple of lovely old mates just sitting and having a natter. And some of the stuff they talk about is really great. It's heartwarming, it's funny, it's emotional at points. Like, it really is one of the things you've got to read this month. I'm not just saying it because it's my job to sell it. I honestly think it's one of the coolest things we've done, and it's great. That's not all we've got in here, though. Luke, do you want to talk about some of the other shit we've got in this new issue?
Every metal band in the world.
No, it's a little bit stacked.
What have we got in there? We've got Conjurer, we've got Mastodon and
Just
Tools.
Talked about them. Conjurer, just this week.
Just them. We've got the Mastodon and Tool supergroup, yep. Legend of the Seagull Men.
That's weird.
Which is what's that about? Still, it's really weird. Like, it's what you'd expect from those two bands. It's, if you like fish and you like metal, this is for you.
Shout out, Al.
Yeah.
Not with us right now, but forever remembered.
And you've got, Primordial, you've got Turnstile, you've got Between the Buried and Me, you've got Andrew WK, you've got...
Andrew WK. We mentioned that, so actually. If you missed it, Luke's got a special feature-length podcast interview with Andrew WK that you can also check out right now. Al also got to speak to Andrew WK. She went out to Chicago for a really interesting chat with him. And I don't want to spoil it, but he was not in the kind of mood you always expect Andrew WK to be in, and it was a really interesting encounter, so you should definitely check that out. We mentioned Love Bites last week on the podcast. This kind of the most probably interesting band in this new wave of all female Japanese kind of power and heavy metal bands that are obliterating the underground over there. We talked to them, that's great as well. Sepultura in here. We talked to Max, Igor, Andreas and Paolo about the year around Roots, the year that kind of tore them all apart and everything went to shit for a while. They also talk about those long rumoured reunion conversations that have happened. There's some interesting insight there going on. It's all in there, it's out now. It's just good, isn't it?
Yes, if you like metal, you need this magazine in your life.
Get it in your life. It's really good. We're very proud of it, and we appreciate your support always, so go pick it up immediately.
We've also got a lot of Middle Eastern bands in there as well. This
very good point. A good point, my mate. Do you want to talk about that quickly?
Yeah, we have, first of all, you mentioned Chaotian.
I did.
They're not actually based in Beirut anymore.
No,
they've moved to the Netherlands, but they kind of grew up during the civil war over there. They've been arrested and interrogated for playing metal because, according to a lot of the authorities over there, if you play metal, you must be a Satanist.
Of course.
That's not a dictate. That's just... that's just what they seem. And we have another Afghanistan band in the issue as well, too.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been through a lot of heavy times as well.
Yeah, District Unknown, a band that we've actually had down to the Golden Gods a few years ago. Another fascinating story there. We always make an effort to kind of cover metal in places where you would perhaps not to see a lot of bands emerging from. But they're a band that came out of Afghanistan where, again, it's actually kind of... It can actually be a life-threatening issue to even play heavy music in the first place. They've got an amazing story, and there's a great new documentary that's coming out about them very soon. So pick that up to read about that also. Also happening in the world of metal this week... We have new Ghost dates. It just interesting.
Yeah, it just came out of nowhere. Yeah. Appeared on their Facebook page, unannounced.
We saw
appropriate for Ghost.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We saw there's been a kind of social media, well, I guess it's a red out.
Yeah.
It's not a blackout.
They've burgundy out.
Painted all their stuff red. Fans going into absolute meltdown, trying to work out if that's symbolic of what's coming next, what we're going to see from them next. And then, yeah, they've dropped a tour poster that's called the Rats poster.
Yeah, Rats on Tour or something.
What looks like a glimpse of a slightly evolved new Papa on it as well, I think, if you look at it.
Yeah, it looks like he's still doing his vaudevillian style, but he's got longer hair now. I think you pointed out that he's got sideburns.
I'm a big fan of the sideies.
And he's holding a cane, he's got leathers on. Looks.
Yeah, I thought leather trench coat to me, or leather, what do you call that? It's the posh suit kind of coat thing he wears. I don't know.
I have no idea. The posh suit coat that
he wears. He's wearing what he wore before. He looks leathery and more sideburny, which is fine with me.
The Victorian gentleman's jacket.
Exactly. Thank you, Jonathan. So, yeah, interesting. One to watch from there. We also had a new Parkway Drive song out today. What we said about the new Parkway song, Wishing Well.
It's fucking heavy and great. Really, really good. We're all big fans of Parkway here, I think. Are we all big fans of Parkway here?
I am a gigantic fan of Parkway Drive, yes. More and more as they've gone on. Like, I was my favourite thing they've done, personally.
Yeah, and I think this it sounds like it's going to be a continuation of Aya in the more melodic way, but also at the same time it can crush and shred and kill you. The video, I think, is silly.
Oh, you don't like the Sinead O'Connor treatment?
what was it? Head from Heart Attack or whatever. Just
Oh God! Yeah.
I
don't know. It's impactful, isn't it? It's. I put it this way. It's definitely not like anything I've seen a band from their side of the scene do before.
No, and I think it feels like they're way more intense. Last album on Aya, they were jumping out of airplanes for music videos, and now it's way more dark and brooding, and Winston just gurning and screaming at the camera. Like, okay, this is probably not going to be a cheerful record.
Definitely getting a vibe from that there's something a bit deeper and darker going on with Parkway this time around. I think it's obviously, everything they do is from a personal standpoint, but definitely feels like it's kind of very upfront and personal stuff, which will be fascinating to see how that manifests in the album itself. But I mean, Ghost and Parkway, both back in action, both doing stuff this year. Very, very excited about that. Two very important bands for where metal's at right now, I think.
If you saw either band on their last album cycle, you couldn't say they weren't both 10 out of 10.
Yeah, I agreed 100%. We can't wait. Also, something happened this week, which I think we're going to kind of try and delve into a little bit, is Tarka had their US tour. Well, no, they pulled it. They cancelled the whole thing. So for people that aren't familiar with this situation, Tarka are kind of a veteran Norwegian black metal band, been on the scene for years and years now, and they were due to head out on a US tour this coming spring. A photo was dug up of frontman Host performing at a show in Germany in 2007, I think it was, and he had a swastika painted on his chest in the photo. So I'm sure you can see where this has all gone. There was a social media outcry. I think a rapper who was due to play at the same venue as them somewhere in America refused to play. Their support band for the Talking Dude dropped out of the date, saying that the banner, this is their actual quote actually. So King Dude said, "The banner under which people enter a King Dude concert must be welcoming to all people, to people of all walks of life, race, religion, gender, etc." It's not an unfamiliar situation for an extreme metal band to find themselves in. Host told Terrorizer magazine recently that the symbol wasn't supposed to represent any personal beliefs of the band. They used it as a symbol. In fact, the exact quote was, "We only use that symbol as another symbol for evil. The usual symbols, the pentagram and inverted cross, don't invoke reactions anymore." It's an interesting situation, and I think it's pertinent in a way that Jonathan said, because I know you know Host and you know those guys quite well. So, I mean, what's your take on the situation?
First of all, that photograph didn't just appear, on the internet. It was, when it happened, there was a lot of talk about it at the time. We actually did a feature in Metal Hammer with Host talking about that incident. And, I mean, it's funny, he gave a different rationale for it then. He said he was trying to break a taboo, and I guess if you're going to put a swastika on your chest, you know, if you do in Germany, it's going to cause the greatest reaction. And I know he's a bit of a provocateur, but I also know that he's not a Nazi. And, you know, whether you think it was foolhardy or not, or worse, you know, this is not a Nazi band. And, you know, there's never been any instance of any of their gigs where there's been any kind of, even insinuation that of any of that. There's, you know, you don't get Nazis at their gigs. You know, Host is pretty much the black metal Iggy Pop. You know, the concerts are just like, you know, the kind of pure punk rock and roll black metal, and they're really celebratory affairs. And so this happening in the US, there's just a lot of forces at play here. There's the Antifa, who are quite effective over there, and they just seem to attack anything with even a merest hint without actually looking further deeper into the issues or having a dialogue with the artists involved. Then there's a whole phenomenon in the US as well of the SJW, social justice warrior, that seem to delight in wanting to take all the less lugubrious bits out of black metal and basically neutralise it. And that seems to be a particularly American phenomenon. But none of these people had a dialogue with Host to ask him about it. And I just think it's, I just think the whole thing's ridiculous.
It's interesting to hear your take on it. I mean, for me personally, I guess a lot of this comes down to the fact that if you're going to get up on stage in Germany with a swastika on your chest, what reaction are you hoping to get that will then, you know, they've got up there and they've caused a shitstorm. Admittedly, 11 years later, which is kind of a bit odd, but I mean, presumably you do these things to cause a shitstorm. That's part of the DNA of a lot of extreme music, and it's caused a shitstorm. So I kind of think, well, what? I don't really know what you're expecting to happen.
Yeah, maybe he was trying to provoke a debate. Maybe he was just trying to sort of prove that, you know, black metal still has a shock factor. But, you know, this isn't the first time it's happened in the US. You know, there was a whole big incident with Destroyer 666 when they played the US. And there were certain accusations thrown at the singer KK in websites over there. And they were proven to be false. And they got into a lot of shit. And it just seems to be a lot of people trying to prove certain credentials by attacking, you know, extreme metal bands without... actually dealing with any sort of actual facts on the ground or looking deeper into the issues. I mean, you know, don't get me wrong. I mean, you know, we would never cover a properly NS, you know, National Socialist Black Metal band. No. And we would never give these people the, you know, the oxygen of publicity ever. But you know, there's, you know, when you're dealing with art, which I still think black metal aspires to be, a lot of people will sell close to the wind, and that doesn't mean, you know, that you need to censor it to sort of tackle the issues that they're bringing up.
Of course, yeah, we might not solve it. I mean, it kind of leads on to what we were talking about last week when it comes to kind of politics and music and ethics and where you draw lines and stuff. I mean, I think that censorship and metal is an interesting thing, because where do you draw the line with what? Shouldn't be. I mean, to me personally, if I was in a gig and I saw a guy on stage with a fucking swastika on his chest, I mean, it would certainly provoke me. Like, I wouldn't know whether to throw a bottle at the guy or just walk out or what. What do you do? But, you know, you raise a good point. It doesn't seem like anyone's even interested in engaging Host about this. It's just kind of,
yeah. I mean, there's a context. I mean, basically, his albums are very much tied in with his native Bergen. He has like seven albums for the seven. All his albums have like seven tracks for the seven hills in Bergen. And there's no history of any kind of race baiting in Talker's music ever.
No.
But you know, he has been pretty much the black metal wild boy. And you know, so he's going. I mean, I think what he did was pretty stupid. And I'm not really sure what point he was trying to make with it. Other than just to wind people up.
Maybe the thing was this kind of stuff. I think a lot of the time these people that do this kind of stuff, they don't even really know what point they're trying to make. They just jump on stage and they paint themselves a certain way, or you know, you mentioned Phil Anselmo jumping up on stage and saying, I'm not saying that's the same thing, but you know, sometimes people just jump on stage, they do stupid shit, they wear stupid shit, and they don't even know what their point is. And
but you know, in,
I'm not sticking up for him, by the way, because I don't know host well enough to go into that side of stuff.
But you know, this debate seems to be deliberately trying to not use any context and use one picture to basically stop a lot of people working and stop a lot of people going to gig. That would have been, in the best sense of the word, a complete riot, because you know they're huge in England. You know, when they can play to 800 people and everyone having an amazing time, and they're a great rock and roll band. And it seems a real shame. And I think a lot of people are getting very self-righteous on the basis of on a very small amount of information and unwillingness to actually look into any further information.
I think engaging people on this kind of stuff is definitely a more productive way of going about
and,
this. You know, but I do still think, like I said, you do wear a swastika on your chest.
Yeah.
You're kind of asking for...
We did a piece, I did a piece with Host at the time, and you know, we didn't shy away from talking about it.
No, of course.
But you know, also, it's black metal. You know, black metal's not always nice. So sometimes sometimes there's an air of danger in black. You know, there's an air of danger in black metal, and it doesn't mean you have to like go along with any sort of particularly extreme right wing views. But I'm just saying that if you try to take that all out of black metal, you're going to take away a lot of its power. Mm. And I think in the US particularly, they don't really have this history of black metal where they can kind of see it in a bit more context. And I think you know, there's a lot of there's a lot of black metal bands stemming from the US that seem to be, they kind of don't want a large part of what makes black metal and take certain aspects of it and take.
But you're not talking necessarily specifically about right wing viewpoints there. You're talking about inherent, like you said, kind of danger, this sense of the other.
Yeah, the sense of the other and the sense of earthiness and
It's probably most of the black metal we listen to, Morton.
Navi
pandy poses.
Yeah, the hipster black metal that we like.
Interesting. Well, it'll be fascinating to see where they can go from here, because as I say, I keep saying it, but I kind of struggle to find sympathy for anyone that does decide to slap a swastika on themselves. But at the same time, I guess what's the end game of this? Like, what, you know, that tour's got pulled. Okay, that's happened now. That tour's not going ahead. So what's the next step? Are the bands expected to apologise to somebody? Because they're not going to do that. There's a statement they put on their Facebook that's, you know, defiant and saying, you know, people don't understand us and this is not what we are and it's a nonsense and all this kind of stuff. I don't think they use the phrase a nonsense. But
I wish they would.
Yeah, it's not them. But, I mean, where do you go with this? I don't want to tread too over. We talked about similar stuff last week, which you can check back and listen to if you want to hear more of this kind of stuff specifically.
Well,
but
I mean,
where do you go with this? What's the end game of?
Well, I mean, you know, they've paid
censorships of this kind, I guess.
I mean, they've paid England a few times since. There's been none of this kind of controversy because we can see things, I like to think, in a bit more, you know, bit more wryly, I guess. But here's the danger. I mean, you know, there are a lot of bands like Destroyer 666 who sell Close to the Wind and you know they got into trouble with some of the Antifa people and with venues and with websites. Talkav have had to cancel their gig. It's looking like the US is going to become a no-go zone for a lot of old school black metal if that's the case. I'm not saying all old school metal is you know, is that necessarily controversial? But people can pick up on anything and create an issue out of it, whether it's out of genuine outrage, whether it's to create a little bit of publicity for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I think in the US, a lot of like on the US like metal blogs and websites, they all seem to be trying to outdo each other who can be the most outraged about heavy metal. Just like your heavy metal website.
Yeah.
I can't see the situation getting any better, and I think a lot of bands are going to think twice about touring the US, and I think that's a real shame.
Interesting. Yeah, definitely a bit of a odd, blurry grey area as well. Did you say talker? I've been saying it wrong this whole podcast.
Talker.
Is that what I'm supposed to say?
I think so, yeah.
You could have told me that before we started this massive debate. Good. Talker, I apologise. Well, not to them necessarily, but to the good listeners of Metal Hammer. So yeah, an interesting situation, and we'll see what happens with that band and if Huss has anything else to say about it in the weeks moving forward. In the meantime, we do have some questions from the wonderful people within our Metal Hammer family. Don't forget you can hang out with us on the Metal Hammer Readers group. You can find it on Facebook, also on Twitter, the main Facebook page as well. Billions of ways to get in touch and hang out with us. What have people been asking, Morten? What's going on?
Well, the first question comes from Christopher Blackwell, who asks, what are some of your favourite non-metal artists?
Oh, God. I don't know. I think the worst thing is I don't know where to start.
Yeah, see, I made a quick list, and I was just like, oh, maybe it means non-rock artists, but at the same time, there's bands like, Enter Shikari that I'm a massive fan of, and they're in no way metal.
No.
But at the same time,
let's go in deeper than that. Come on.
But at the same time, I'm a massive fan of Lord and Charlie XCX.
Yeah, that's what I want to hear.
Yeah, and Little Mix, to be honest. But,
yeah, sure. Yeah. I actually, weirdly, I've got a mate, a good friend from home, shout out Jack, and we got in a habit of just making lists for each other all the time, top 10 lists, really nerdy boy shit, welcome to my life. And we actually did a top 10 all-time pop bangers on there, and I had Michael Jackson on there, I had Lady Gaga, Christina Aguilera for sure, Justin Timberlake, Future Sex Love Sounds, one of the greatest albums ever. Beyond that, we all listen to hip hop across different levels, don't we?
Yeah, like we say Kendrick, Stormzy.
Yeah, it was Kendrick, Stormzy, some good recent stuff. Outkast is one of my all time favourite hip hop groups ever.
Ever, yeah, massive Eminem fan back in the day.
Of course, still saw him at Reading.
Yeah, again.
Any minds. Maybe not this one, he played more recently than that, didn't he?
Yeah, to be fair, last year he was genuinely really good. It was all the big songs he just did in a bit of a medley rather than as, full 4 minute bangers that I wanted.
I'm a massive anyone that hangs out with me outside of work and probably in work as well, to be honest, knows that I'm a big dance fan as well. Love Prodigy and Chemical Brothers and
Deadmau5.
Massive Deadmau5 nerd. So yeah, always happy to delve in and out of metal when it suits us. Jonathan, you're being quiet.
Yeah, sorry. just having a little reverie over like all my 80s stuff I grew up with, because I'm like, I'm a complete 80s kid.
Right, it's the editor of Subterranea is about to go to town now.
The band I completely grew up with was Japan.
Amazing.
It was like the first gig I ever went to, first record I ever bought. But I found out much later on that loads of like heavy metal bands also obsessed with Japan and David Sylvian and his solo stuff.
I've said for years, if most people honestly knew what their favourite metal band actually listened to, they would shit the bed.
So
I had a conversation once. Sorry to interrupt you briefly. I had a conversation once. When both of us were very drunk, so they will not remember it, so I won't know them. Backstage at, in the download guest area with one of the greatest riff machines of the 90s and beyond. I don't know who it was up there, and we basically talked about how brilliant Lady Gaga is and the fact that he has a poster of her at his house. And this is like a relatively old school, like serious heavy riff.
That's
guy.
Amazing.
I'm going to name names. Eric Danielson of Wartain is a Lady Gaga fan.
He managed to sneak
backstage in Sweden when she played, and he's convinced that she sang, what's the song, Rockstar.
Rockstar by Gaga.
Yeah, there's a song where she sings about and he's convinced she was looking at him.
No. What a song that was.
So for those
Heavy Metal Lover, maybe?
Could be, yeah.
That's a tune.
Yeah, it could be.
Heavy Metal Lover.
So for those who don't know Japan, they were like
Japan, yeah.
Japan. So they were they started off sounding a bit like they were like a bunch of pretty boys. They started off sounding a bit like New York Dolls, then they discovered synths and created some like they became an 80s pop band, like a kind of a classier version of Duran Duran, perhaps. And became and became like huge pop stars for a little while. Their biggest hit was like Ghost, which is just this really weird, slightly avant-garde song, really depressing, that got to number 5 in the charts. And then they split, just they were becoming like huge. And the singer David Sylvian, who's this completely striking looking individual, went off and did his solo stuff, which is a bit more earthy, a bit more proggy, went on a bit more experimental. And his solo stuff is some of the most beautiful music I've ever heard. And I saw a post on Facebook by Tom G. Warrior messaging about his love for Japan.
Wow, we are really outing some extreme metal heavyweights today.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
My God.
Yeah, but all the Akakoka guys, they're like obsessed with Japan as much as I am. So my modern pop band of choice is probably Churches.
Oh, Churches, yeah, are brilliant.
Yeah, because
absolutely brilliant.
But like, because they remind me of early Depeche Mode, like before they got serious, when they had Vince Clarke, and they've got that kind of really 80s synth sound.
Awesome, yeah. Fully back in Churches, and they've got a V for their name, haven't they? So they're metal,
instrumental
crowd.
Yeah.
Also, shout out the latest Thundercat album. That is fucking
Oh, that's great.
Brilliant.
With one of the greatest album covers of all time.
Yeah.
So, so good. Definitely check that out if you haven't got it. Adrian Murillo asks, who are the greatest thrash bands? Not ever, of all time. Just who are the greatest?
Who are the greatest thrash bands?
Well, it's Metallica, so
it sort of has
draw a line under that.
Yes, it's like, it is Metallica.
But it is Metallica, but I still think props need to go out for the German bands.
Yes.
Yeah,
I actually think that the German bands were way more influential than any of the American bands.
Oh, hold on.
Come on.
No, I'll tell you why.
You can't say one of them was more influential than Metallica.
I mean, obviously, there are a lot of bands who sounded much like Metallica, and so, you know, there are a lot of thrash bands who kind of
just for sheer number of people who would have heard them would have maybe
A lot of the thrash bands like Sodom and Creator, they were the beginning of the whole black metal movement as well too.
Fair, very fair.
And all the good thrash bands now, like Necromantheon, the best current thrash band on the planet from Norway, they sound like the German bands like Creator, and they've got that kind of really dirty, filthy, reverb-drenched, genuinely apocalyptic feel.
Awesome.
That you don't really get with bands who are doing straightforward thrash.
Go on then. Yeah, pick one legend and one current thrash band each.
Okay, well, current thrash band is Necromantheon. They are the best thrash band on the planet. Damn.
Amazing. Well, I would say, it's definitely Metallica, if you're asking, which probably not. My second favourite out of the Big Four is Megadeth, because Metallica's quite obvious. And current is Power Trip, probably surprised to nobody.
It's got to be Power Trip. Although, not that current anymore, but I'm a massive Municipal Waste fan.
Oh, yeah, yeah, of course. Yeah. No, they still count. We're talking like post-90s.
Post-90s. And Metallica is the obvious answer, but because they left thrash behind for a bit, I'm just going to go with Slayer, because they've been thrashed through and through.
Awesome. And on that note, we have a special tribute to Slayer written by none other than Dave fucking Mustaine. That's also something in the new issue that
how's that for
mentioned
metal?
Earlier, but yeah, very very cool exclusive thing from him.
So Paul Willey asks, now that he's back to full health, should Joey be reinstated as Slipknot drummer?
I'm going to let Morton handle this. Slipknot fanboy, Slipknot on the team.
Yeah. Number one fan. It's so hard because you do just want him back in there. You just want to go, yep, he's an original member.
The heart says yes straight away.
Exactly, completely. It's going, why wouldn't he be? But at the same time, you don't want to do a disservice to Jay, who's done a great job filling in. You know, he's an amazing drummer. And his contribution to the last album, as well. And obviously live, he's a machine. But you do just want to see Joey back up there. And it's really sad that he's not there. Obviously, he went through a lot physically, and his health and everything else, trying to get back just behind a drum kit now with Vimic. But you'd need him there. It's what this rumour's going around with in the stories that you read online, that the next Slipknot album is going to be their last one. You want?
I haven't read that.
You not seen that?
No.
Okay. Corey O'Clan said that this could be their last album. Effectively, I can't remember who's.
Well, anything could be anyone.
Yes, anything could be the last one. But if that is, and they go into the studio as Red, that's the last one. You do want at least 8 of the 9 possible people in there.
I mean, I agree with you. I think Jay's earned his stripes, Zen's boiler suit. But no Slipknot fan is not going to be overjoyed at the idea of Joey coming back. Personally, it's not even like I think it will happen. It's just I kind of assume it will happen, because in the world we live in, in a world where Slash is playing on a stage with Axl Rose again,
yeah,
I don't think anything's ever going to be off the table again. So I think it'll happen at some point, but you wouldn't want it to happen for any other reason than everyone's absolutely into it and it feels right and all that kind of stuff. Because if there's any band that I would die from seeing just kind of capsize into cynicism and just whatnot, it would be Slipknot.
Yes, Slipknot. I've never done anything for the money. And if they suddenly, if someone suddenly, you know, if this is seen as like a cash grab, which I don't think it would be, but you don't, like I say, you don't want them to be doing anything for cynical reasons. It needs to be from, you know, the heart. And Slipknot's always been a family, you know, about the nine. And I think, you know, Joey, you know, will undoubtedly be welcomed back in at some point. It's just the circumstances around it, I'm sure, go way deeper than we are.
Absolutely. That's always worth remembering. Like, we all like to fucking have our opinion and shout our shit onto the internet with this stuff, but the only people that really know what have happened there is Joey and the rest of Slipknot, and that's what really, really counts. I'm going to let you do this next question because I don't know what the hell this name is. Oh, it's a Twitter handle.
It's a Twitter handle. Oh, welcome to the internet.
All right, go on.
Right. At TJCrazy_chemist, solid name, asks...
A.K.A. Clive.
Crazy Clive.
No offense to any Clives out there, by the way.
Asks, do you guys think that Judas Priest will ever play again with KK? If Sneap isn't going to stick around, who's your pick for second guitarist?
Now, obviously, not by what's gone out in the media this week.
I was going to say, obviously, as of, you know, yesterday and today, you know, KK and Rob, you know, exchanging words in the press, yeah, about, yeah, what KK annoyed that he didn't, you know, get the call back. But
again, another, we don't know what's happened, that's all between the band issue. But I mean, you quit. I kind of made a big thing out of not playing again, so I don't know.
But who would, you know, if, for, you know, if Glenn is out now, let's, like, say he can't do be full time again, who would you want to, and Steve isn't going to stick around, you know, who would your pick for second guitarist be?
Fucking hell, younger, decent Shredders.
But they have to be young. If it was going to be a younger, decent Shredder,
well, it wouldn't have to be. I mean, you can just go.
It'd have to be someone who kind of fit into Judas Priest, obviously. You know, I'd rather go with someone who had a bit more experience,
like, I'm trying to think of someone who just wouldn't be filling in from another band, like a Gary Holt situation. Not that he's just filling in, but you know what I mean.
Yeah,
like, he's from Exodus, but he's also playing.
Yeah, I'm trying to think who would actually fit. Possibly Bill Steer.
Bill Steer is a blinding shout. That'd be great.
If you were going to go for someone who wasn't English, I'd probably go see if you could grab Nick A. Anderson. I think would be a great shout. Or just, you know, who understands classic metal in their blood. And I think you need to, for Judas Priest, you need to have that really deep in your blood to do it. So I would actually go for a slightly older hand.
Good choice. I would pick Wes Borland. No, I would like to hear that.
Adam D.
Adam D. To be fair to Adam D, Adam D would get it. Like, Adam D would, you want someone who's going to come out and shred through a Judas Priest set. Maybe less of the banter, though. Yeah, I don't know. Perhaps. I mean, it would be great. To be honest, I would, purely from a being a bit of a dickhead point of view, I would genuinely love to see them put in someone like Sinister Gates or someone, because the guy could do it and it would drive the internet insane. I would back it. I would love to see that set.
The reaction to that would be incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. Sin for Priest.
Hashtag Sin for Priest.
Sin after Sin. Priest. Anyway. Little joke for you Priest fans there. Steve Gerrard, presumably not that one, says, which band has made the most original contribution to metal in recent years, or is everybody just rehashing old ideas? I mean, I think if you can't find bands doing something interesting with metal, you're not looking hard enough. Such as, I mean, the first two that came to mind for me were Code Orange.
Yeah,
Forever was an album that didn't just rehash metal but hardcore and everything. And Zeelandada.
Which
is a bit more, for want of a better word, gimmicky, I guess, because it was taking two disparate things and mashing them together. But at the same time, I had never heard anything quite like that before, and I don't think you can always say that in modern music. So
I mean, I think there's always innovations in heavy metal. And also, if you're really honest with yourself and you're making music, you're not going to sound like anybody else anyway. I mean, you listen to Royal Thunder, that's music from the heart. It didn't really sound like, even though it had that kind of retro rock tinge, it didn't really sound like anyone. You couldn't say, oh, this riff is taken from there. Bands like Iranzi Pazuzu, who are you know, doing completely new things with black metal, taking it into like really strange and cosmic territories and making it really hypnotic and mantric. And I think they're one of the most original bands to come out of black metal for quite a while.
I think it's hard to tell what bands making original contributions in recent years, because it's only further down the line you see what impact a band has had, I guess. You know,
but the same, of influences,
yeah,
for sure.
But at the same time, you are already seeing hardcore bands adopting a certain sound, or at least attitude, after the explosion of Code Orange this year. And sort of on, not necessarily on the flip side of that, when Bring Me released Semper Eternal, the sudden influx of metalcore bands going, we want to sound like that,
yeah,
was
absolutely
mental.
Absolutely.
Yeah, which is not necessarily Bring Me's contribution to metal, but it's just,
well, I think,
here's what we can do.
I mean,
this
musically,
sound.
You know, you can hear a riff and recognise it, that it sounds like a Bring Me riff, but as some people might not like this as an angle on it, but even from a production point of view, Semper Eternal will still be influencing albums for years and years to come.
Oh, the electronics on it are ridiculous.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, there are other bands who like kind of put a lot of other bands behind them, like Amen Ra. Mm. You know, you can tell they were listening to Neurosis, but what they do is something completely different. And particularly more so a few years ago, because I think you'd hear lots and lots of bands trying to sort of get that kind of Amen Ra sense of like traction and that playing just behind the beat that Amen Ra do. And but again, that's a band that play entirely from the heart. And so you're not going to sound like anyone if you do that.
No,
if you're really honest with yourself and you really push yourself.
Absolutely.
Innovation, yeah. Not emulation.
I mean, even in terms of like just the little things, like that Conjurer album, which we've talked about a lot, and is about to drop imminently, and you need it in your lives. You know, you can break that down and say, well, this clearly comes from here, and this clearly comes from here, and this clearly comes from this. But when you look at the excitement around that band, for a band playing music that heavy and horrible and gnarly and stuff. That's. I mean, it might not be. I don't know. It is innovative in a bit. It's definitely exciting. It's definitely fresh.
Yeah,
it's like it's a take on the formula that's got people excited in a way that not many bands that heavy get people excited on a wider level.
Yeah.
I mean, look at Gojira. You know, when they came out, you could say, okay,
exactly.
You know, they're taking this bit from Strapping Young Lad. They're taking this bit from
exactly.
Morbid Angel. But the way they saw those things, how they worked together, only they could have seen it in that way.
Exactly.
And they created something. Really original out of it. Plus, I believe that you can only really create genuinely original things if you know where the music is coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the history of innovation, is taking stuff that's gone before and knowing where it's coming from spiritually or whatever, and create something new out of it with your own personal perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there's lots of really original bands who go, oh, I can see where you took this from, but like, how do you make that into that?
Yeah, absolutely.
You
know?
And because you're the classic case in point.
Yeah, totally. Fair. So there's plenty to be getting on with cynical metal fans. I'm not saying Steve was cynical when he asked that question, but
no,
there's a shitload of exciting stuff to read about and hear. And you can read about loads of it in our new issue that is out right now.
Segway back in.
Segway, baby. Yeah, the new issue is out right now, just dropped today. Halford interviewing alongside Iommi, proper historic piece that you really need to get into your eyeballs. We've already mentioned it: Vile Creature, Conjurer, Aelstorm, Slayer, Legends of the Seagullmen, Sepultura. If you like heavy stuff, we got you covered. Don't forget to also check out Luke's exclusive extended interview with Andrew WK, also on the podcast's format. And don't forget to subscribe if you have enjoyed this, and give us 5 stars so we can boost up those podcast ranks and more people can see us and join the Metal Hammer family. Jonathan, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
We'll definitely be hearing more from you soon. We will hear from you next week. What have we got coming up? What's going on? I'm going to France, lads.
Why are you going to France?
I'm going to France to see Carpenter Brut, the leader of the synthwave revolution that we've been talking about on the podcast recently.
Yes.
Going out to Montpellier, down in the south of France. I've never seen Carpenter Brut before. If you haven't heard any of his stuff, he dropped a brilliant new album last week that you should be all over. It's absolutely fantastic. And if you haven't seen the Turbo Killer video, that's your homework. Go watch the Turbo Killer video.
Genuinely is one of the greatest music videos.
You showed it to me, Jonathan. I remember you saying, have you seen this? I'm not going to tell you about it. It's just great. I'll be reporting back from Carpenter Brut.
Youth Code are supporting as well, I believe.
You mentioned about them.
Incredible. I can't wait to see your reaction or hear your reaction when you see
you. I'll FaceTime you as they come on.
Yeah.
Anything else going on?
I don't think so. I think I'm off to see Here Lies Man next week, which the sort of Afrobeat meets Black Sabbath band.
Oh, no. Oh, I like that. That album's great.
Yes.
There's just realise what you're talking about.
There's a new one dropping very soon. Album. There's a new one
already?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, end of next month.
Where are they playing?
Moth Club, my suddenly new favourite venue. The one that Drab Majesty played a few weeks ago.
Nice, awesome.
Well, I'm off to freezing Oslo for Bylarm.
You are.
Minus 15 it's going to be.
Awesome, yeah. You're going for like a panel thing and seeing Zeal and Ardor there.
Zeal and Ardor, Gals Verd, which is Gals' new band from Exil Gorgoroth. Solstafir are playing. Who else is playing? Au Noir, a great classic.
It's a hell of a lineup.
Black thrash band, and Devin Townsend's doing an acoustic set.
That's not incredible. Bad
at all. So, if you're listening in from Norway and you're going to be London this weekend, go buy Jonathan a very expensive pint.
Yeah, please do, because I can't afford it.
Cheers, guys. We will see you next week. Stay cool, stay metal. Don't paint swastikas on your fucking chest. See you later.
See you later.
Bye.